we definitely want to make money. We want to value women's sports. We want women's sports to have the same platform as men's sports.
I'm MK Anderson, and this is First 100 Days. Podcast, where we discuss the idea that if the first 100 days of a presidency are so important, they're likely to be important for anybody else's career and life moves. We'll talk to CEOs, first-time parents, startup bros, and more to discover if the first 100 days are really that important. Today, we're speaking with Maddie Fry, board president and founding member of the Premier Ultimate League, which is a professional women's ultimate league in its third year of existence. I'm extremely excited to learn about what's involved in the first 100 days of building a professional sports league. And with that, let's get started. Hey, Maddie, how's it going?
Good. How are you, MK? It's so good to be with you today.
It's been a hot second. I feel like we only see each other once a year, but every time I'm so excited too.
It is about once a year, but I hearken back to our outbreak days very fondly, so I'm so glad we get to chat.
I'm actually wearing my jersey just to sit there and be like, I'm basking in my nostalgia here. So.
I mean, it's important. So for the listeners who don't know, MK and I played together on Atlanta Outbreak in 2015.
Somewhere around there. Yeah, 2016? I don't know.
All the former Outbreakers and all the great things they're doing with the PUL.
Yeah. Well, so I know a lot of my pals and other people I know that I played competitive ultimate frisbee, mm-hmm. which is kind of where Outbreak and these kind of code words in a way
yes,
are from.
Good point,
but
good point, yes.
why don't you give a little bit of background on one ultimate frisbee in general, the community around it, okay. And then what the background of the PUL, aka Premier Ultimate League, is, because that. To be fair to everyone, this is what we're going to be talking about is professional ultimate frisbee, which is a competitive sport, I swear. So, yeah, how about you give a little bit of background on that?
Okay, I'll try to do my best with the ultimate frisbee background, and please feel free to chime in. Ultimate frisbee as a sport has been around since the late 1960s. I think a group of high schoolers invented it in New Jersey, and it's just really taken off from there. Now, I think 7 million people play the sport worldwide in over 100 countries, which
crazy.
Is really exciting. Our team, Atlanta Soul, which I'll talk about later, helped to sponsor a tournament in East Africa last month, for example, a women's tournament in East Africa. So it's super exciting to see how much the sport is growing. As far as the background on the Premier Ultimate League, we have our roots actually in a boycott of the men's professional league. And so there was a men's professional ultimate frisbee league for about 8 years, and we had hoped they would start a women's league, and they didn't. And there was a boycott that activated a lot of folks like myself, who then went and tried out for the men's team in our cities. Some of us made the team, played on those teams, I had a great experience playing for Atlanta Hustle in 2018, and thought, you know what, we need this for women. And in 2018, Nashville was the first team. They had a men's team, and they were the first team to come out and say, we're going to have a women's team, and it's going to be equal to our men's team. We're going to spend the same amount of resources, the same amount of training and coaching. It's going to go to both of these teams. And so they came out and just made that statement and kind of shocked the ultimate frisbee community, honestly.
Well, we're for it.
Yeah, right? We were just amazed, and it was just so bold. Like, okay, who are they going to play? You know, what are they going to do? And so then the Nashville team, headed up by Dave Trett and Colleen Wright, kind of went to different cities in the Southeast and said, hey, we'd like to play a women's team from your city, and we'll help fund it even to make it happen. And so working closely with Atlanta Hustle, we kind of got that started. And then realized, like, you know what, this is something that we could really do, not just for one game. And so we split off and became independent. The Atlanta Women's Ultimate is a organization. It's a part of AFDC, which is Atlanta Flying Disc. I know I'm having a lot of acronyms, but
all the acronyms.
I know there's so many, but this pre-existing Atlanta Women's Ultimate organization was really helpful in getting our team, Atlanta Soul, off the ground. And lo and behold, you know, I'm going to skip a bunch that happened, but six teams from different cities, mostly around the Southeast and Midwest, formed in that time in 2018, and we played each other in a series of exhibition games. And then after that season was over, around June of 2018, we all got together and said, "This is great, but it's not meaningful. We don't have a league. We're not competing for a championship. We don't have sponsors. We don't have insurance, you know, across the entire league. Like, and we're not getting the kind of visibility that the men's league is getting without [S2] Right. [S1] A league really pushing us. And so we wanted to create a platform to kind of push our values forward, our values of gender and racial and socioeconomic equity. And so those six teams got together. Angela and I kind of put forth a proposal, a very draft proposal, and we workshopped it. And Angela is my co-owner on Atlanta Soul, Angela Lynn, who needs no introduction, but who is amazing.
Another Frisbee person for all of you to go look up later. Exactly. I'll try to put like a cute, not a cute, sorry. I'll try to put like a small bio of any... Oh. Or not even bio, but just like any, like I'll make a little dictionary. I'll just like put a dictionary of all the acronyms, all the words, all the things, and just be like, here's your crash course on Ultimate Frisbee, everybody.
Actually, that would be perfect. And I think Angela's bio is on our website, on the Atlanta Soul website.
Oh, cool.
So you could link it there too. She's a Hall of Famer. She's currently coaching one of the national teams. She's amazing. So... we had put forth that proposal. We got a lot of great feedback. And then we had a conference call with anyone in the U.S. or anyone anywhere, actually, who was interested in women's pro. And we had about, I think, about 15 or 20 people in that conference call, from Medellin, Colombia, to Seattle, Washington, to obviously Austin, Nashville, Atlanta, Raleigh, Detroit, Chicago, Indianapolis. I think New York was on that first call. So a lot of interested cities. And from their feedback, we then tinkered a little bit more, came up with a model, and came up with an application form and said, we are launching the Premier Ultimate League, and we are looking for cities to join us. And so that first year, we ended up with eight teams total. And that was launched in January of 2019. So the Premier Ultimate League was born in January of 2019.
It's really only 2 years in existence.
I mean, the league itself is only 1 year and 1 month old.
Wait.
Because we started in January 2019.
Oh, my goodness. That's right. Okay. I'm like, oh, it's 2020, because all my pals. The great thing about the PUL right now is that it's grown at least a little bit. Yes. And so I have pals. There isn't a Chicago team. There is a Milwaukee team, which also doesn't really make a lot of sense in my brain, because there's a big Frisbee contingency in Madison, not Milwaukee. But such is life. Right. And a lot of my pals have tried out for it. I don't know if the rosters are things, but you know, because friends and gossiping and stuff, I'm sure I know some people on it. And so that's why I'm like, oh, it's its second year already, because to me it's already started. But
right in that, like, we are sort of about to start our second season, but the league itself is still only 1 year old. It's kind of amazing.
Wow, it feels so it feels like it's been around, not like for forever, but it feels like it's a very pivotal part of things these days, which is cool.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say that, because we want to have that visibility. You know, we want to be an institution within our Ultimate Frisbee community and beyond. So I'm really glad to hear you say that.
Well, so then, without giving away the rest of the podcast by like telling us the whole formation of everything, what would you say is the structure behind what the PUL is? And I mean that by like, where are the teams? How is it governed? Because I know you guys are a board of directors. I looked that up. Yes. It's a 501c6, correct?
Correct.
And I don't know what that means. I just looked at it. But you guys are governed by a board of directors. You're the president of it. What is that? Why that formation? And just to give basic background, because yes, it's a professional sports league, but it's not the MLB, it's not the NFL, you know, so what's the difference between those?
Well, interestingly enough, the NFL was formed as a 501c6.
I don't know,
which is why that 501c6 designation, specifically in the description, if you look it up, does mention professional sports leagues. As started by the NFL in like the 40s or 50s or something like that. So when we were in formation and getting some legal advice, we, you know, realized that we are a mission-based organization. That's not to say we're not trying to make money, and I was sort of misquoted in that original New York Times article. We definitely want to make money. We want to value women's sports. We want women's sports to have the same platform as men's sports, if not a bigger platform.
And also, for all the women out there, it is totally okay to say you want to make money. I just want to put that out there. Because I feel like that's just something we're all like, oh, no, like, this is a passion project. Like, I'm just doing it for passion. Like, which is great. Make it a passion project that also makes you money. Like, that is fine. So everyone, women, you are affirmed.
I mean, that's exactly right. Like, women, and especially women and people of color, have traditionally held jobs that are not valued for society, you know, and I think that has a lot to do with the patriarchy that we live in, sort of historical factors. I love that that's starting to change. And I just, you know, I say that because while we are a not-for-profit, we still very much need money and very much want to pay people market rate, you know, salaries, if not higher, for doing really good work that they do. And, you know, we're trying, like a lot of women's sports organizations, we want to turn this whole thing on its head. Like, women's sports are valuable. There are sponsors. Mm-hmm. There are people who want to pay for this. And we should be highly compensated for the work that we're doing. So that's all to say, we are a 501c6 nonprofit. That basically just means the profit gets invested back into the business. And we couldn't be a C3 because we understood that because we are paying professional athletes, that we probably wouldn't be recognized by the IRS as a C3. So we went with the C6 route. Now we are forming a C3, a 501c3, as a foundation in order to take contributions that we can give tax deductible status to. And so that's information right now, and we're really excited about it. And
I'll, yay, everyone, get your tax write-offs early. This is where you heard it first. Yeah.
Thank you. Yes, exactly. And I'll just kind of get into our business structure a little bit. So with that 501c6, we developed bylaws, a code of regulations, and an operations manual, which, by the way, we are constantly always working on. And I want to shout out Eileen Murray from New York, who's taken a huge lead on helping us with that operations manual in particular in our rule set. So we form those things. And with that, we have a board. The board is made up of two representatives from each team. Now, that doesn't necessarily have to be the owners of each team. For Atlanta Soul, it is. And for a lot of teams, it is. But for some of the other teams, it's the representative is someone designated by the owners who they want to represent the team and on the board, and who's probably doing the lion's share of the work. And so right now, last year we had 8 teams in the league. So we have 16 board of directors members, and we've expanded this year. We've added 4 new teams. So we have 12 teams and 24 members of the board of directors, which might sound like a lot, and it is. And we have
a lot of cooks.
A lot of cooks in the kitchen. We have weekly phone calls on Monday nights, and it's on Zoom, and most people join by video camera. So it's super awesome just seeing everybody's faces once a week, which has gone a long way towards sort of building rapport, especially with, you know, folks that we might not have known or we've never met in person. And so we're building this rapport through these weekly meetings. And the board of directors weighs in on a lot of decisions that are made by the league. Now, we also have a commissioner. His name is Bonesaw Kepner. He was one of the founders of Austin Torch, along with Dre Esparza and Rachel Yeager. And last year, he was our only paid employee. And I want to talk a little bit about our model and how it works, because this is super key. So in order for the Premier Ultimate League to have funding, and this is way back in summer of 2018, Angela and I were kind of going through this, like, how do we get funding? And I also have a friend named Dan Kaniski, who you might know. He's the owner of Spin Ultimate here in Atlanta, which is an ultimate apparel company. And he and I were chatting. And
Yes. Like, one of the many. Yes.
Yes, exactly.
This will go in the dictionary.
Yes. Good. And we are friends and thought partners and help each other out with our business endeavors. And he said, well, why don't you do a buy-in model, which is, I guess, what the NFL did to pay their commissioner. And that means that the teams buy in to the league and that the league then uses that funding to hire a commissioner. And the commissioner then runs the league. And so I was like, that's brilliant, because it's a little bit of crowdsourcing, and it then means that the league will always be owned by the teams, which is really important to us. You know, it means that the players are actually owning and running the league. And that was a very important value and part of this whole thing for us. And so that's what we ended up doing. So the teams pay, we started off with a $5,000 buy-in, and we used that funding to pay for our commissioner's salary in 2019. In 2020, we have 12 teams, so we'll have a higher buy-in, and we were able to hire a second staff person, and her title is league administrator, and her name is Julia Johnson. She lives in Seattle. She plays for Underground. You might know her because she's from Atlanta.
And oh, I was going to say, this sounds like a familiar person.
Well, she played on Outbreak, which is an elite club women's team here in Atlanta, the year before you did.
Okay.
So we have that Outbreak connection. That's so great. So that's basically how we have the funds to pay for the operations of the league. And now a third person who has come on staff recently is Hannah Leathers, and she is our development associate. So she's basically running the individual giving portion of our fundraising. And that's what I mentioned before, where we're starting a 501c3 so that we can get individual tax deductible donations in the door. There are folks who are basically saying, hey, as soon as you get that status, that 501c3 status, I'm ready to give. And so we realized we needed to kind of speed up that process. So if you are interested in donating, please go to our website, premierultimateleague.com. Thank you. And
I'll put it in the show notes as well too. No worries.
And you can get more information about sort of what you're paying for with that donation.
So then did you still have something you wanted to continue with?
The last key part of our model, we have the buy-in, and the buy-in pays for the operations staff. And then how do the teams get money to compete in this league? Because these are brand new teams, building their fan bases, ticket sales and merch sales alone are not quite enough to cover team expenses. Mm-hmm. And so again, this was a brainchild of our commissioner Bonesaw, and he did this with Austin Torch in 2018. And then we did it for the entire league in 2019. So we have a fundraiser called the Player Sponsorship Program, and our amazing sponsor at VC, headed up by Adriana, has basically offered to provide jerseys of each team for sale. And then those jerseys are unique insofar as these are sponsored jerseys. And so you can't get these jerseys anywhere else throughout the season. Cool. And on one day, all of the jerseys will go for sale, and each player can be sponsored up to 4 times. And then through that fundraiser, each team last year made about $11,000.
So cool.
Yeah.
And really you can get like a vintage jersey out of it, essentially. Like, wait 10 years and
this
thing is, you know, really, really, off. Yeah, like there you go. Sell that thing on eBay if you need some grocery money.
Yeah. That's exactly what we're hoping for. And so last year that worked really well, and each team did sell out. The entire league sold out in 5 days. We raised $120,000. And I think that was huge. And that happened in the first 100 days, right? And I think that was a big moment for us, because we had come out, we had this great vision and mission statement. We were player owned. We were keeping in tune with self-officiation, which we can talk about later if you want to. But I think it still remained to be seen, is this viable, you know? And there were some skeptics out there, and we launched that fundraiser and we sold out in 5 days, and we raised $120,000 for the entire league.
My eyes are so wide. I remember seeing that and being like, oh, wow, that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
That's not, you know, that's not pennies, right? And I think a lot of us, to put this in perspective for everyone who doesn't understand otherwise, there's a professional league now, the PUL. Up until this point, all of us that play Ultimate Frisbee and we play it competitively, we are playing club, which is just like, you know, travel soccer when you're a kid, right? It's club soccer That was the highest level of Frisbee we could really play. And we have to pay for that. Like, it is a very expensive hobby. I was on the Chicago elite women's team here called Chicago Nemesis. Everyone should go support them. I had to retire because wedding things. But it was, you know, and I was trying to be frugal about it. I have a flexible life schedule. I can fly out on, you know, Thursdays and Tuesdays instead of flying in for just the weekend. But I was still spending upwards of $1,500 to play, you know, with all the things.
Being frugal, I would say it's closer and to 2 to 3,000 per player per year. Yeah,
exactly. And I'm and I live in a hub, you know, I live in a flight hub. So there's no connecting flights. You know, there was even a tournament in Rockford. Yuck. But, you know, like that was drivable. So to put that in perspective for everybody, $150,000 is so, or would you say 120,000?
Yep.
But well, then you guys still had the buy-in in general. So even just having the operating costs of somewhere around $150,000, but that's fantastic, because then you're not asking players to spend you know, $1,500 to play. And that's, that's kind of the struggle with a lot of people. And I'm, and we can talk about this too. Because not having to pay does then give access to other people to play, because this isn't just something. Like, this is something I had to budget into my summer. Like, okay, I am going to spend this much money on Frisbee, because to me, it's important to run around and have friends and have that community. But it's not just like, oh, what's $1,500? Like, a kickball league in Chicago is $80, you know? So it's very different. So that, yeah, that is amazing. Well, I play kickball leagues here, so, you know, so, but that's the thing. Yeah. So it's really awesome that you guys raise that much money. And then, the only other thing I wanted to ask about, some built up stuff here to give the idea.
Yes.
How many games then are these people playing? And and you said there's 12 teams. So is everyone playing all 12 teams, or just playing a couple? Is it kind of like, are there divisions?
Yes, yeah. There are divisions. Can I go back to the mission stuff for 1 second?
Oh, yes.
Because I love what you were saying. And so a huge part of us starting this league was around not just gender equity, but racial and socioeconomic equity as well. And recognizing that exactly what you just said, MK, like right now, our sport is limited to the folks who have $2,000 to $3,000 in discretionary income every year. And that is very limiting. And it also is meaning that we're not getting the best athletes. You know, we're just getting the folks who can pay their way. So it's not fair, and it's not addressing, you know, these root causes of inequity in our country. So our mission, what we came up with, is to achieve equity in the sport of ultimate by increasing accessibility to and visibility of women X players through high quality competition, leadership experiences, and community partnerships. And our league strives for racial, gender, and economic diversity in the sport of ultimate Frisbee. And it was really important for us to have all three of those in our mission. Mm-hmm. We are fully, you know, obviously, going for gender equity. That's obvious, right? But we cannot divorce that from racial and economic equity, given the intersection, the very strong intersection of those three things in our country. And so, players did not have to pay to play last year, and they got paid to play. So we say we are professional. We are semi-professional. We're not, this isn't our full-time job, obviously.
Right.
In Atlanta, we were happy to be able to double the per game salaries, or I should say per game wages of our men's team counterpart. That might be because we have fewer games,
so
we have a lower budget, but still, you know, we were really happy about that overall, you know, that we felt it was important to pay folks to play, not just to say, you know, we'll pay for your gear and we'll pay for your travel, but we're actually paying them to be in every game. So how many games are there? This year we have 12 teams. We have two divisions. So in each division, there's six teams. We have a central division and an eastern division. And so you'll play five games within your division, and then we'll have playoffs. So the top two within each division will move on to playoff weekend, championship weekend. We'll probably have two semifinals on Saturday and then the final on Sunday. And those will be June 20th and 21st. Note, we are accepting bids for championship weekend, and you do not need to be in a city with a Premier Ultimate League team in it to submit a bid. In fact, we have already received interest from cities without a team. Not Rockford. Right. Sorry, Rockford, if anyone from there is listening.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's championship weekend, and we're really excited to kind of get that up and running this year and have it be a big marquee event. And then other marquee events, we will release that same player sponsorship program again on March 2nd. And so note your calendars, 5 p.m. Eastern time, all of the player jerseys will be live, and that's the first time that team rosters will be revealed. So
awesome. Yeah. Well, this is coming out March 1st. You're going to be in the first episode, so these people can get on it for March 2nd. So that's fabulous.
That's
there we go.
Timing.
Perfect timing. Cool. And then again, just to note, because this, I'm already so interested by this whole thing, and I didn't even ask you, like, what even happened the first 100 days? There is like a West Coast league,
yes,
kind of, right?
Yes.
So, because I also have a pal out there playing.
Yes.
But it's not part of the PUL, or it is kind of part of the PUL?
It's not part of the PUL. It's called the Western Ultimate League. Mm-hmm. WUL is how we've been referring to it. And that was started in 2019, last year, through a series of exhibition games similar to what we did in 2018. And that was called the West Coast Women's Ultimate Championships. And so teams from Seattle, Portland, LA, San Diego, and Arizona played each other in a series of exhibition games and live streamed them and got a lot of visibility and started those pro teams just like we did in 2018. And we were talking with them a lot last year, really supportive of the work that they're doing, kind of giving them everything that we had done to date to support them. We basically have the exact same mission statements. And so we are super supportive of what they're doing to increase the visibility of women in Ultimate. Can I go back to one thing?
Oh, yes. Go wherever you want.
Sorry, I forgot earlier. When I said Women X, I wanted to describe why we spell women WOMXN.
And it's not a typo. I know the E and the X are so close to each other, but it's not a typo.
Yes, it is confusing. But we do spell Women X that way. And sometimes we just pronounce it women, but it is pronounced Women X. Because we are intending to provide an inclusive space for non-binary athletes. And so anyone who identifies as a woman or non-binary is invited to compete in the Premier Ultimate League. We don't have any hormone requirements. And so anyone who identifies as a woman or non-binary, again, like I said, is invited to try out for a team in the Premier Ultimate League.
Cool.
Yeah.
We love progressiveness.
I know
that's also, I mean, it's cool that because this is a new professional league that you can start doing things like that, because I know it's probably so hard to establish those sorts of things in, again, already established professional sports leagues.
It is.
Like, it'd be really hard to go back on tennis bylaws because Lord knows those are not up to date on things. Those are very like 1950s women must wear white skirts, you know, so... Yeah. So, but it's really cool that this now, because this is starting now, this gives you guys the opportunity to do all that,
right,
and like
exactly.
Provide that space. Yeah.
And we kind of said, you know, this isn't something that we can afford to not do at the very beginning. If we don't do it at the very beginning, when will we do it? So it has to be baked into the fabric and the vision and the values of the league, and to just continue to expand the focus on that going forward, as opposed to trying to, like you said, squeeze it in at some later date, quote unquote, after we've been successful. Well, after who's been successful? Mostly white women?
Right.
No, we don't want that, right? Mostly
right.
Cisgendered white women? No, we don't want that. So we wanted to make it very clear from the outset that this is an inclusive space, and that we are really dedicated to ensuring that visibility isn't just white women athletes, you know? Cisgendered, especially white women athletes.
So cool. I wish we could talk about this for a million years, but like truly, I think it's so fast. I mean, who knows? Raise your hand if you've ever met anyone who started a professional sports league, like zero humans, everyone. Like, so it just the fact that this is something that's still happening, that people can start building professional. I mean, we, you know, Game Boys and not Game Boys. MK does not do this. I do not do video gaming. There we go. Video game gaming, things yeah. is a real thing, right? So we can all tell what type of sports I play. So, so okay, cool. So now that we have like a total understanding of all this, yes. And I'm sure some people still don't worry. That's fine. That's not even the important part. What does that, you know, what you kind of touched on what the preparation was, but what do you think were like the pivotal preparation things? Because obviously that was like a year's long time. And then from there, where do you even think, if I was to say, okay, we're going to talk about the first 100 days, what would you talk about? What would you say is that first day? What was day one?
Okay. So preparation, I think preparation is more around sort of some philosophies and values that we like baked in from the very get-go. And so, for example, I talked about those series of conference calls. Like, we didn't just make this up in a vacuum, you know, like, even from, you know, crowdsourcing ideas from Dan at Spin, you know, like, we were constantly kind of going out and saying, like, what does the ultimate community want and need? For example, you know, we had those conference calls to get all that input from dozens of people who were interested in this area. And we really listened and responded to the feedback they gave us. Secondly, when we were trying to name the league, we submitted a survey to our community, you know, basically just on social media. And we got over 400 responses. And we had a bunch of different options for different names. And people voted. And that's how we came up with Premier Ultimate League. So it really was kind of crowdsourcing from the get-go. And then that kind of ownership is what we were trying to build from the get-go. Like, we can't be seen as these sort of far off, like, leaders who were doing things down in Atlanta or something like that. You know, we needed to really convey from the very beginning, like, this is only as good as we make it. We being our entire community. And that means, like, a lot of people are going to have to do a lot of work, you know, and that's kind of what ended up happening. Like, we, the teams that joined for our pilot year in 2019 did so much work on just the formation of the league, you know, and then folks in their communities also did so much work. We have, you know, observers and volunteer game coordinators and tons of volunteers or even paid folks who are working so hard to like make this a reality. And I think that's one of the steps, I guess, in the formation process that was really important to us, is like building that in from the get-go.
And just to ask, because I feel like this is something at least I am curious about, did you guys hire a lawyer? Like, how does that work?
Yeah, we hired a lawyer.
You had to get legal, right? Like, you had to be legal, you had to be legitimate. And again, like you mentioned, this is not everyone's full-time job. So all y'all have full-time jobs. And so I'm sure, I mean, did you have a Frisbee player who's a lawyer that you're like, great, you're our league lawyer now?
No. Okay. Good question. So some more of the concrete things. So, we reached out to a lawyer in Nashville who had worked with, the Nashville Ultimate community, who we knew through Colleen and others from Nashville. And they helped us with like our incorporation documents. And so that's how we got set on that route. We're now working with another lawyer who's a nonprofit lawyer who's helping us with the incorporation process for the 501c3. And so we're doing that. As far as budgeting, Angela Lynn is a wizard, and she is our league treasurer on the board. And so she's from the get-go sort of drafted budgets, updated them, and like kept us on track with our projected income and what we're actually spending. And so we didn't necessarily have to hire like an accountant to do all of that or even a bookkeeper, because we have Angela, and we do a CPA helping us do our taxes, of course, but that was huge to have that from the get-go. And then just having, you know, a really dedicated group of people kind of workshop the vision over and over and over and say, what's the model? What would it look like? And coming up with drafts and getting that input. I mean, zillions of Google Docs with tracked changes and comments and, you know, and responding to folks' input. I think that's probably the more of the like process of how we actually got started.
So then, and before I ask what you would consider as day one, how many hours a week do you think you dedicate to this? because it's professional. Yeah. It's a professional league, yes. But also, yeah. like you mentioned, like this is a conglomerate of people and thought leaders, and you know, and it isn't a full time thing. So right. To build this, how many hours are you putting aside every week, and how many hours do you think other people are putting aside yeah. every week?
It's a great question. So it really varies. Right now, I put in about 10 hours a week, probably a little more, probably close to like 12 to 15. And as a side note, the executive committee is starting to get paid for their work. And a lot cool. of that has to do with the work that Hannah Leathers is doing to get money in the door. So that is super awesome. And I think the same probably could be said for everyone on the executive committee. We have a full-time commissioner who's paid 40 hours a week. We have a full-time league administrator who's paid 40 hours a week. And then we have a part-time business development associate, and she's paid 20 hours a week. And then the board, minimum 2 hours a week on our weekly phone calls. I said mm-hmm. 2 hours, but I meant 1 hour. There's supposed to be one, but they sometimes go over.
I was going to say, it's 12 to 24 people on a phone call. I yeah. doubt an hour is going to really make it work. Yeah.
We've got a lot to talk about. And then all of the board members serve on at least one board subcommittee outside of the board. And we have a lot of subcommittees because we have a lot of work to do. Right. And that's something that non-board members can also serve on a subcommittee if they go through the nomination process. And we do have some non-board members serving on subcommittees, which is really exciting. And then our first day, we launched in January 20-something. I should know that date of 2019. And that was really all about like the unveiling. Like we had that survey, which indicated to the public that yes, we are launching a league and we need you to help us name it. And then we had little inklings here and there, sort of things that we were pushing out on social media. But mm-hmm. on that day in January, it was the announcement of the league, the announcement of the 8 teams, because we had gone through that whole application process already, the unveiling of the 8 teams logos, and an awesome video that just got people super hype about like the amazing athletes who are women who are playing Ultimate.
So cool. So then, yeah, tell us what happened once you guys yeah. launched. I'm sure, like you said, you had the jersey buy and
mm-hmm, yeah.
But then I'm sure it was kind of because you can, I know this from just doing my own sort of life things. I mean, you can do a bunch of prep work all you want, but then the moment you make it public, like, oh my gosh, now you have to do things, right? Like I have an Instagram for this podcast, and I'm like, all right, I have this podcast now and everyone's following this Instagram. Like, oh man, that means I have to post to the Instagram. Like, oh man. So I'm sure you guys had a similar feeling, right? Like, okay, yep. we've launched. Now what?
Yep, exactly. That's you right, spot on. Okay. So we launched. Now what? I mean, we had the weekly board meetings that basically started happening immediately after we launched, maybe even a couple of weeks before we launched. And that's really where we started getting, I don't know how to say it, but we started understanding how to operate as a league and what were mm-hmm. our norms, what were our systems, what were our procedures, you know, how are we going to run these meetings? How are we going to set the agendas for the meetings? I know this sounds really ticky-tacky, but that's what I spend most of my time thinking about, is just like procedure, like what comes
That's
next.
Fair.
And from my perspective, also in my job as a public health evaluation consultant, that's all strategy is kind of thinking through like, what is my goal and what are the steps I need to achieve that goal? And how do I know that I'm making progress? Mm-hmm. And being able to kind of reflect and track back on the progress that is made is super important. And so we're kind of just putting in place these systems, these procedures, these operating, you know, operations manual and getting that in place, which again, like might sound kind of boring, but is really fascinating if you think about the opportunity that we have at hand to
right.
incorporate our values of equity into every word and every sentence of our mm-hmm. operations manual, which then becomes quite a task. It's an opportunity, but it's also quite a feat to try and do something like that, because we don't have any models. Like name right. another professional sports league that has equity in their mission statement. I dare you. Like, does it exist? I don't think so.
Does video game have one? I don't know. I clearly know everything. I don't know. I know Jenna Marbles does it sometimes, so I feel like she would be a driving force, but I don't know. So,
who's Jenna Marbles?
Do you remember Jenna Marbles? Oh, man. She was one of the, like, OG YouTube people, and and she still makes – she's one of those people now that she can make whatever video she wants, put it on YouTube, and it'll get somewhere, like, 5 million views.
Oh, my god.
Right. Because she can. And it's not like – it's not, like, offensive videos. It's just, like, her painting her face a million different colors sort of things.
Oh, my gosh.
But she also – video games, I think, or she does Twitch is like live stream stuff.
I know about that. Okay,
see, I'm no so wonder. Technologically advanced.
You
folk.
Really are.
Yeah, not really. I coach a high school frisbee team, and they just tell me the words the kids say these days.
Yes,
so
totally.
Yeah, but sorry, so you're making you have this task and this opportunity to make an equitable league. But yeah, I'm sure that's so daunting,
just building it from the ground up. Yeah, it's daunting and it's exciting all at the same time, and we daily have conversations like, what should the rule set be? Should we have, for example, an ejection rule? We follow the USA rules, which the USA Ultimate is our sports national governing body here in the United States. And so we are using their rule set for the most part. Obviously, we're changing it because our games are timed and their games aren't.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have a whole ejection clause. And we have this whole conversation around, do we need that? And we're really focusing on self-officiation and highlighting and elevating self-officiation. You can even self-officiate a game in a professional setting, right? And we proved that last year, and we were really proud of how we proved that last year. And so, looking at the rule sets, like, do we need to eject players from games? That sort of assumes that a player intentionally did a harmful thing. And what are those assumptions, and to whom are those penalties applied? And we all saw what happened with Serena Williams at the US Open. And in general, we've seen data that people of color tend to receive penalties or fouls at a higher rate. And so, we're having those kinds of conversations at the board meeting, and how can our rule set reflect and acknowledge those kinds of realities while keeping the game safe for our players? Mm-hmm. So it's like never ending, It's
just
like
a lot of thinking all the time. Yeah. Dang. And so then, you have these calls, you make rules, not rules, but like guidelines and the handbook. And then you guys sell jerseys. I mean, how does that work? Like, where's the progression? And then eventually there's a game.
And then there's a game. Exactly. So we had the player sponsorship program, jersey sale in early March. That, again, was super pivotal because it just kind of communicated to the world, like, we can do this. I think that's when we really stepped out as, we're serious. We're not messing around. And then our first game was in late April. I think it was April 20th. And then we had two games in opening weekend. The first poll was actually in Nashville.
Cool.
Nashville played Indy. God, my memory is horrible. Should look it up.
Remember anything.
That whole weekend was a blur for me because I was playing with Atlanta Soul in Medellin, Colombia.
You guys played in Colombia?
Yeah, because they're in the league. And so they needed to have a home game.
And players didn't have to pay for that?
No.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Folk, you can travel internationally by playing Ultimate Frisbee. You heard it here first.
Isn't that amazing? So there were two games that launched that weekend. We had such an amazing outpouring of interest and support online, watching those two games and commenting and following along. And, with that kind, this is why we have professional sports, because fans, just having fans elevates the level of play. And so you're in a stadium, you have screaming people just cheering your name, and it's so exciting, and the adrenaline is pumping, right? And you see these players just doing ridiculous things, like spinning pirouette catches from Catherine Yost and Elizabeth Mosquera just shutting down everyone who's within like 20 feet of her, or I should say 20 yards of her, actually. And just the most amazing plays that are finally getting visibility, right? That are finally getting the platform. I think we had 10,000 views of the Atlanta Soul versus Medellin Revolution game that happened in Colombia.
So then, I mean, was this before I guess you guys launched, or after you guys launched, that you got coverage? Would you say that you have outside video coverage? Are you guys covering yourselves? How is that working?
So we are doing the live stream, and it's through each team's YouTube channel. And then that is just promoted through the Premier Ultimate League website, through our websites, through our social media channels. And then we, you know, UltiWorld picked it up, which UltiWorld is Ultimate Frisbee's kind of largest media group. So they would pick it up and push it out. And then the players themselves. And that's been a huge part of our success, is just having the players activate their own communities, whether it's through email or word of mouth or social media, getting players, you know, to really promote what's happening, because this is player led and player driven.
And is it part of your future goals to have partnerships with broadcasting? I know that the AUDL has stuff, right? I actually don't know much about the AUDL. I don't know much about men's frisbee, to be honest. I am not a man, so I never felt the need to know as much as I do. I know that there's something on ESPN. College Ultimate has ESPN coverage. Is that something that you all are hoping to have as well?
It would be awesome. And to be fair, the AUDL is doing really well in this regard, and we are learning a lot from them. Their commissioner and owner sit on our advisory committee and have been super helpful for us. So
cool.
I am still hoping for equity, for gender equity, that people watch more women's ultimate than they watch of men's ultimate. And I say that, and also, you know, am impressed with the work that they're doing in this area. So yes, we would definitely love to have like a sponsor, you know, especially someone who can help us with the live streaming. Right now it's up to each team, and that's something that is doable right now. And I think that will continue at least through this year. We actually did look into Twitch on Yahoo.
And so it's relevant. Here we go.
Definitely relevant. So we're like thinking through what are our options. Again, it's kind of tough to do that when your values are front and center. Like, we're not interested in selling out. And so how do you, you know, how do you find a media partnership that isn't, you know, owned by companies that we might not agree with?
Right.
I'll just leave it at that.
No, that's, I mean, that's fair. And that's hard. It's hard because it's, from a business perspective, like we talked about earlier, you all want to be profitable.
Yes.
So there are decisions that would make that a lot easier to do, because in terms of business, there are lots of different things you can be doing to make things profitable.
Right.
But at the same time, to hold both values and also make a profit is unfortunately a bit harder to do.
It is.
Which is just unfortunate.
I know. And I feel like it's especially hard to do in the startup phase when people just don't know about us. But I am so positive. I'm 100% positive that there are a ton of women and person of color led or owned companies out there who would love to work with us. They just don't know about us yet. And we need to get the capacity to potentially hire a sponsorships person or hire an outside sports marketing consultant to help us make those connections. And we're just not quite there yet, but we are definitely getting there. And if anyone on this podcast is listening and wants to help us out with that, we are all ears. You can email me at msfry@gmail.com.
Yes, I will also put that, I repeat that again, but I will also put that in the show notes thing. Just say it one more time.
Ms, as in Sam, Fry, F-R-E-Y, @gmail.com.
Awesome. Yeah, I mean, if anything, I hope that from this, more and more people are, one, aware of that thing that consumed so much of my life and now understand that it's not just some silly little thing I do every once in a while, though there are very many silly things that are involved with it. But that it is an opportunity to it's an opportunity to kind of change the way that we look at professional sports to begin with.
Yeah.
Because new sports and new opportunities are coming up all the time. Because people are creative and they're thinking of different ways to do things and compete with one another. And that's not to say that, like, you know, the NFL and the MLB and the, you know, the NHL are like these terrible, terrible things. Mm-hmm. It's just that, like, they weren't given the chance to make themselves a valued or not a valued, but like values a valued driven. Values driven thing.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
You know, and that's just part of the times, which is not an excuse for things, but it is part of the story of it.
I think that's true. I think that's really well said. Like, if you look at the women's NBA, the mm-hmm. WNBA and the new collective bargaining agreement that was just agreed upon. The players had gone without an agreement after their prior agreement had elapsed. I don't know if that's mm-hmm. the right word, but and they finally agreed upon a new one, and it is amazing, and it has all yeah. kinds of great things built in for players. It like tripled the maximum salary that a player can make in 1 year. It like added childcare benefits. It gave players a lot more freedom to like when they're becoming free agents to move around and advocate for themselves. It was just really cool to see that just happen in 1 year, you know?
Right.
And so I just feel like a lot of stuff is just kind of leapfrogging right now, like with the US women's national soccer team and sort of a lot of attention that they brought to equal pay, you know, and that's
right.
That's a tough one. And I'm proud of like Megan Rapinoe, especially for using her platform to speak out and say like, you know, of course folks are behind us. We're mostly white women, you know, and mm-hmm. let's see what can happen in other sports and to really elevate non-white women as well.
This is so cool. Like I said, I wish I could talk about this all the time because I care so much about women's sports and even just, you know, just having the representation of opportunities for women is so important. Like I said, I coach a high school team and there was one girl on the team last year. It's technically an open team because there's not enough girls to make its own separate girls team. It's also a very small high school. And I think she literally mentioned to me that the only reason why she kept playing was because I was coaching and I was an assistant coach. Seriously. And you're just like, oh, cue tears, you know, like and it's just so easy to be knocked down by high school boys because right. they just, for starters, are so much taller than you.
Totally.
But yeah, well, OK, awesome. to put, you know, to be all on the nose about this, would you then say that the, you know, from the day you launched to that 100 day mark, mm-hmm. do you think that was an important part of your process, not as important, you
oh
know, pivotal? How would you
totally
look at it?
Pivotal. I mean, it like set us up for success. It was basically like a do or die moment, you know,
yeah.
like, is this going to work or is it not going to work? And I think going into that first 100 days, we were all so passionate, so enthusiastic, like there was no way it wasn't going to work, to be
yeah.
fair,
yeah.
but you know,
manifest it, we're for it.
Yeah, exactly. And so, but it's, we still did need to prove it because we are trying to get paid to do this and we need fans, we need sponsors, we need you to buy our t-shirts, you know, and that is mm-hmm. that first 100 days was our chance at building our brand as a league and as these teams. And I think coming out and saying, this is our brand, we're high quality, we're values driven, we're committed to these things, we're not going to back down, and we're going to entertain you and just wait, you know, and then we showed it,
right.
you know, in that first two games that we had for the opening weekend. And that happened.
Were some of them like universe points? Were some of them like crazy tight games?
Like, tons
or something?
Of them. Did you watch Man. The semis of the championship weekend?
Yeah, well, I think I was traveling or something, but I remember people
yeah.
like texting me about it.
It
and being like, this was nuts.
Wild.
Or we had it in group chats. And I was like, okay, well, I'll go find the replays right now.
It was wild. So we had two semis back to back. The first semi was New York versus Raleigh. And that went to double overtime.
And that's nuts.
Was decided by 1 point. And then, so the second semi started a little bit late because the first semi was in double overtime. And the second semi was between Atlanta Soul and Medellin Revolution. Also went to double overtime, was decided by 1 point. I think the final score was like 28-27 or just something ridiculous. Like that's not really an ultimate score. That's like a football score.
Right.
Know?
Yeah.
So these games were just so exciting. And it's, you know, so exciting to see these teams playing at such a high level because most of these were first year teams, you know, who
mm-hmm.
had never played together before and were competing
right.
at a very, very high level.
Right. And on top of that, you add on that people still value the club scene as well. So, you know, people are kind of splitting their time and training for various different
oh, yes.
ultimate things. So to see, it's just cool to see, especially in cities that maybe don't have a quote unquote elite women's team or, you know, a team that's going to nationals every year sort of thing, like having also a stage to showcase all of their players.
For
which
sure.
is really cool.
I mean, I do
yeah.
think like having Ozone in Atlanta was huge for Atlanta Soul. because we'd had a strong women's ultimate presence for a long time. And then there were several mixed teams whose women came out and played for Seoul last year. And that also strengthened the awareness and visibility of mixed and how there's high level mix happening at the same time.
Oh yeah. My friend in San Francisco is saying one of her favorite parts about playing for the team out there is that she does get to play with different people on different teams that she doesn't otherwise get to play with, because it's almost like an all-star team in a way.
It is.
It's like all these just really great women from all these other different teams that get to play together.
It's so true. I mean, Seoul had over 80 women try out. They came from 9 states, including Illinois.
What? Who is here from Illinois? Wait, who is trying out? Excuse me, ma'am. Ma'am, what are you doing?
9 states, 21 cities. It's truly a regional team. We're not an Atlanta team. We're called Atlanta Seoul, but we are truly regional, you know.
So cool.
Bringing in folks from all over. And I think the same is true with a lot of these other teams.
Wow. Well, I'm truly so excited for the 2020 season. Like I said, now that there's a Milwaukee team and I have even more direct connections of people, I'm really excited to watch. And I guess, unfortunately, with that, I mean, we've been talking for so close to an hour now. And like I said, we could talk for forever about this. But do you have any lasting things you want to plug, you want to mention, you want to explain before we...
two things. One is I would plug again our fundraiser, our sponsorship fundraiser, which is on March 2nd at 5 p.m. And you can go to premierultimateleague.com or you can go to VC's website, VC Ultimate, and they are our amazing sponsor who's kind of sponsoring this whole fundraiser. And then the second thing is just this really is a movement, and there's so... You know, I'm just kind of telling you the story of how everything happened, but I feel like I didn't really tell you the names of the people who were like super involved in all of this. And there have been just dozens and hundreds of people who have really stepped up to make this happen.
Right.
And so I just encourage you to go online, go to our website, read the bios of some of our board members. There's just really, really impressive people who are making this happen. And I want to... really convey like this is a movement and anyone can get involved.
I mean, folks, this isn't, like we said, this isn't just like a kickball league. They're building a professional sports league. So, you know, like you said, it takes a village. It takes multiple villages around the country, in other countries too, to do this. So I just applaud you guys so much, because I care a lot, but I don't think I care enough to do this, you know, like it's almost it's like daunting for me. And so I'm ready to support you all. I'm ready to give you any platforms needed.
Yes. Thank you so much.
Like for people like that, it's hard. It's a lot, you know. You're not just like gathering friends to toss a disc once in a while. It's a lot of things.
We're starting businesses, you know, and then we're running those businesses. And I think that's, you know, it is fun and it is inspiring, but at the end of the day, we are running a business, and we're running a business to elevate women's sports, which get 4% of media coverage of all sports media.
So,
you know, we're just up against a huge, huge mountain, and we need everyone's help to climb it.
Yeah. Oh, well, on that note, which inspiring words, thank you so much for chatting with me. And unfortunately, I don't know when I'll see you next, because like I said, I've retired kind of.
Just
all of my older friends are like, you didn't retire. Oh, Miranda. Yes, of course. Well, so for anyone out there, make sure you guys check out the Premier Ultimate League. Like I said, I'll have a whole show notes. It'll have a little dictionary and spark notes about everything, and even a video of people laying out and stuff. So you're not just like, oh yeah, this is that thing my dog does. This is not the thing your dog does. Okay. So there we go. All right. Awesome. Thanks for listening to this episode of First 100 Days. Original music by Dan Chmielinski, and feel free to tell your friends. Bye, y'all.